Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
So say I was calling a girl and she had, you know, a brother or a sister. I mean, there was a 25% chance of her actually answering the phone when I called, and a 75% chance of the mom, the dad, or the sibling answering the phone. And I can't tell you how many times I would call, and I would just block. I mean, it would be bad enough if I was just trying to talk, and I was like, ha, 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 you know, and asking for her and trying to say my name and trying to get that out. But when you can't say anything, and I'm like just gasping for air, they think it's a prank caller or a obscene caller. I'd get hung up on. Just time and time again.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
Doing creative work can be kind of lonely, and that's why we built the Unmistakable Listener Tribe. The Tribe is a community for professionals to connect and support each other. Everything is designed to help you grow your business and share what's working and what isn't. And that's true whether you're a business owner or an artist. You'll get access to feedback, live conversations with guests, and so much more. By joining the Tribe, you become part of a community of creators who all support each other, and it's completely free. Hopefully I'll see you there. Visit unmistakablecreative.com/tribe to join. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/tribe.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Rob, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, it is my pleasure. So, you know, as you and I were saying before we hit record, you've actually been a listener to the show. And I always love it when, you know, I get to hear stories from listeners that are so interesting that I want to have them as guests. In fact, that just, you know, is probably the ultimate compliment in terms of what we could be accomplishing with the work that we do here. But, you know, you told me that you're the creative director for the Universal theme park, and immediately I was intrigued. But before we get into all of that, I want to start with a question that you may have heard me ask once or twice. And that is, do you have siblings? And if so, what birth order were you, and what impact did that end up having on how your life has turned out?
So I have an older sister. She's about 20 months older, and she lives in Atlanta, and she is a lawyer. And she's a very successful lawyer living in Atlanta. And I'm younger. And it's really interesting because I never really thought about the impact, I think, until recent years. So she is a lawyer. She got straight A's, like, throughout everything, you know, all the way through her Ivy League law school that she went to. And that was not me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and so even though she's a year and a half or so older, she was grade ahead of me in school. So I always had the same teachers that she had, like year after year. Like it was just a cruel fate or something. But I would always get the same teachers, and the teachers would have the expectations that, you know, oh, you know, I'm her younger brother, so I'll be a straight A student as well, and that was not the case.
Yeah. Well, so there are numerous questions that come from that alone. So, you know, it's funny because I think that despite my sister being the younger sibling, she is kind of that same sort of, you know, caliber and pedigree. Like, you know, me and my friends joke that I remember when she was first dating, we're like, who the hell is she going to marry? Elon Musk? Like, look at her, you know, pedigree. And turns out, you know, her husband happens to be kind of the same. He's, you know, Stanford alum, you know, did Harvard, you know, grad school at the Kennedy School, then worked in the Obama administration. And we're you two guys are basically like, you know, basically is guaranteed you're going to have genius kids. But the funny thing is, like, I remember for the longest time, I had a very deep sense of inferiority when it came to my sister. I was like, oh, she's 1,000 times smarter, which she is, by the way. But there was the sense that, wow, I will never achieve at the level that she has. And I wonder, did you ever feel that growing up, particularly when you had to go through this experience of, you know, the same teachers and being that close in terms of school?
I never felt that personally. And I certainly never felt that for my parents, you know, or the expectation to do as well in school as she did. But I definitely had that feeling, you know, from teachers or guidance counselors or principals even, you know, just because there was like this expectation, you know, where I'm like begging the teacher for extra credit projects or something, or or, you know, like asking for extra help in math. And that wasn't the case with my sister. But I think I had a pretty healthy relationship with that.
So, you know, you have a sister who goes and gets an Ivy League degree, you know, becomes a successful lawyer. And that makes me wonder, what was the advice that your parents gave each of you about making your way in the world when you were growing up? And did it change, you know, with you in comparison to what it was with your sister? Did she set any expectation with them? I mean, I know you kind of said they didn't put pressure on you, but how did the advice change from each sibling?
So it's funny, like my sister, when she was, I don't know, like in first grade, I think, or maybe second grade, my grandfather was actually taking her to elementary school, and they were late and he was speeding and they got pulled over by a police officer. And my sister, who was, I guess, however old a child is in first grade or so, she actually was arguing with the police officer and talked him out of the ticket. Like, she talked him out of the speeding ticket as a first grader, you know? So at some point, either my grandfather or grandmother said to her, she should become a lawyer. And it was like so weird. This is like a movie. But from that instance on, like, that was the only thing she had in her head. Like, I'm going to become a lawyer. She never had, you know, like this, this existential crisis of, well, what should I do? What are my passions? Like, she just had it in her head, I'm going to become a lawyer. That's what the path was. And that's what she did. I was all over the place, you know. Wow. I loved cartoons and Disney movies and the Muppets. I thought that Jim Henson was just brilliant and this innovative pioneer. And I loved SNL and comedy writing and Mad Magazine. I mean, so my interests, you know, were just all over the place, and none of them were along the traditional path of, okay, well, here's the, you know, like, here's exactly everything you have to do to become an SNL writer or a Mad Magazine writer or to write for The Onion. You know, I mean, if you're interested in medicine or becoming a lawyer, there's just a very clear cut path. Here's what you do. You know, here are the electives you take. This is the extra, you know, like, these are the activities to boost a resume. Not the case with me. I had no idea how to do any of the things I wanted to do.
Hmm. And if memory serves from when you wrote in, you also had to deal with a learning disability of some sort, right?
No. So I started to stutter.
I remember it was something along those lines. Yeah.
So I started to stutter at age 2. And I mean, this was actually probably the biggest thing that has impacted my life. It continues to this day. You know, I have overcome a lot of the anxieties around my speech for sure, you know, but it isn't something, you know, that you overcome fully, I would say. But my speech journey and the stuttering, I mean, that has absolutely played the biggest impact on creativity and me exploring creative ways of doing things, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, you probably heard the episode we had with Jose Peranian, who is now a stand-up comedian and public speaker who stutters. And I remember he opened the episode by saying, he was like, for those of you who think there's something wrong with your Wi-Fi, there's not. But you know, what I wonder, and it's the same question I had for him, is how did that impact you know, your relationships, your friendships, and particularly your dating life? Like, where does that carry you in a dating life? You know, I mean, I can't imagine. You know, because I think that all of us go into dating situations thinking we have some sort of like real disadvantage when, you know, we don't. It's either the person likes us or they don't. But I mean, you have to overcome real obstacles in communicating just with that one little basic piece alone.
Well, I mean, everything, you know. And so I grew up, you know, in the 80s, started to date in the 90s, you know, and there weren't cell phones. God, that makes me sound like a dinosaur, you know, but there wasn't texting or any kind of messaging capabilities. You know,
I remember those days because I grew up those times. Yeah.
Okay,
I
mean,
my roommates are 10 years younger than me, and it's like, you guys don't remember a world without the internet.
I mean, email would have changed my life. I mean, there's no question about it. And texting, I mean, but I would have to call, you know, so say I was calling a girl and she had, you know, a brother or a sister. I mean, there was a 25% chance of her actually answering the phone when I called, and a 75% chance of the mom, the dad, or the sibling answering the phone. And I can't tell you how many times I would call. And so there's stuttering, you know, which is basically just like, I don't know. It's like a repetition, you know, of a particular sound like that.
Yeah.
And that's bad, you know, because if you do that enough times, you know, people eventually start to notice and they snicker or they laugh or they make a funny face or whatever. And when you have enough repetitions, then you kind of like evolve into the next phase, which is just blocking, which is like the complete inability whatsoever to get at the sound. It's almost like there's someone and they've got their hands like squeezed around your neck and you can't speak, you can't breathe. And so blocking really sucks. So what would happen is when I would call a girl on the phone, and you know, and again, there's like a 75% chance of someone other than her answering the phone, like I would just block. I mean, it would be bad enough if I was just trying to talk and I was like, ha 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 ha, you know, and asking for her and trying to say my name and trying to get that out. But when you can't say anything and I'm like just gasping for air, I think it's a prank caller or a obscene caller. I'd get hung up on. I just time and time again. It definitely makes, you know, those everyday things hard, like dating or asking someone out.
So I wonder, you know, what did your parents do in order to help you overcome it? Because I mean, you and I are in conversation, and you compared to, you know, Jose's level of stutter, like I don't even feel like you have a stutter just listening to you. Like I know you've emphasized it just for the sake of, you know, demonstrating.
Right,
but,
right.
What did your parents start to do to help you deal with this?
I mean, I've been in and out of all kinds of different speech therapies my whole life. You know, probably starting when I was around 2 or 3. And again, you know, growing up in like pre-internet times, of course, you know, was also pretty lonely as far as being a person who stutters, because I didn't know anyone else who stuttered, you know, and I wasn't insecure about, you know, my sister making straight A's and all this stuff, but I was definitely insecure about my speech. I felt like there was something wrong with me, you know, and when you're a kid and you're sitting in class and you have to read out loud and, you know, like they would always go up and down the rows, you know, okay, so we're going to go up and down, you know, and each person reads a paragraph and just go up and down. And I'm just sitting there waiting for my turn, waiting for my paragraph, and you're sweating and, you know, like your neck is burning up. I mean, it's just awful. And I tried a lot of different therapies, tried a lot of different breathing techniques. And I think my stuttering journey has evolved a long way, you know, in terms of therapies and different desensitization techniques, along with my journey as a creative person. Just, you know, because another challenge was, you know, if we're in school or something and we have to do an oral report or a presentation, I mean, my parents would always be talking to the teachers and looking for other ways for me to do the project other than actually stand up in front of the class and do an oral presentation. Cause that, you know, at the time was like going in front of a firing squad. So that actually forced me to be creative at a young age. Cause I would do things like I'd make videos. I would grab our Sony Handycam video camera and I would make humorous videos and just other things in terms of presenting the material instead of actually standing in front of the class and doing a presentation.
Wow. I love that. So one thing I have to ask, you know, I mean, you and I were talking about your wife before we hit record. So tell me about the first date with your wife. Like, does a stutter come up? Like how did that all unfold?
So it's really interesting. We actually met, So I don't think I've ever actually said this publicly, but we've actually met on an online dating site. I never thought I would be on an online dating site, and I didn't even go on it because of speech, but it's really interesting how we met, because really the beginning of our relationship was just a lot of emails back and forth. So we've really had the chance to get to know each other through just long, detailed emails. You know, they were funny and they were sincere and they were sweet. And so by the time we actually met in person, you know, we already had established a pretty decent connection. But no, I hid the stuttering. I don't think I actually told her and brought it up until, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months of actually dating. Because, you know, I guess back to the fear and the insecurities and the inferiority, you know, and all that, I just, when you are mocked enough times and you kind of have those moments in your head, like, you'll look for any way possible to hide it. So basically, I got really, really great at hiding my stuttering. You know, you can hide it by, you know, like, if I'm speaking to you right now and I want to say, you know, I'm on the Unmistakable Creative and I'm about to say that, but I have this fear in my head about, oh no, I'm going to block on the you. I can switch, you know, I could just instantly switch what I'm saying and say, I'm on a podcast, instead of actually approaching that fear of the you or the C. So what happens really with people who stutter is you can either openly stutter, which is probably the healthiest thing, you know, and you just have some repetitions from time to time, but it's pretty easy. You can block, you know, which I described. I mean, that just feels like you're being strangled and can't get a sound out. That sucks. Or you can hide it, which is what I did for probably 30 years, you know, where you avoid words, avoid situations. I would pretend I would have laryngitis in situations. I would go to a restaurant, you know, and if I really wanted to, I don't know, have the steak have the steak, and the waiter is standing there, you know, and I'm about to order, and all of a sudden at the last minute, I'm afraid of the S sound or the ST sound. I would switch it and I would order the chicken instead. Wow. And I went through, decades of really not ordering what I wanted, not saying what I wanted, going to the movie theater, you know, and I wanted to see this movie, but I got up to the counter and I was afraid to say that movie, so I would see something else instead. I mean, just so many situations, you know, which really just leads to not being authentic, right? And not being true to myself.
Wow. So, you know, I have two questions about this. One, I don't think that we ever completely outgrow all of our insecurities. I think that we're all insecure about something. Like, I'll be the first to admit that I think that, you know, despite, you know, sort of getting over it to some degree, I think I'm still insecure about the fact that, you know, I'm 41 and single, and, you know, which is the bane of, my mother's existence and the bane of any Indian mother's existence. Like, that is definitely like a source of insecurity for me. But, you know, I think that we all feel insecure about something or other. And, you know, I mean, obviously, like, in your life, it played in a way where you're choosing not to eat what you want to eat and see the movies you want to see, which is crazy. But what do you say to people about the things that they're insecure about? I mean, which, you know, may not be stutters, but there's something.
Yeah, well, I think what I've realized in recent years that I wish I realized a hell of a lot sooner was that everyone's got something. I mean, because I just remember growing up and feeling, you know, really, really alone because we didn't have the internet, you know, so I didn't know anyone else who stuttered, and I definitely didn't know anyone my age who stuttered, you know, so you feel like everyone is looking at you, and you feel like everyone is pointing at you and whispering behind your back. And I guess the older I've gotten, I've realized that people aren't really focused on you because they've got their own stuff that they're worried about, you know, like, no one, I mean, like, when you're a teenager and going through Target or wherever, you know, you think everyone is looking at you and there's this big spotlight. And then when you're older, you're like, you know, no one cares. Like everyone is so caught up in their own stuff. And, you know, and it's really interesting because so I have two kids, you know, and we talk about this stuff a lot at the dinner table because, our daughter has celiac disease, you know, which is an autoimmune disease, and she has to be gluten free, you know, so it's not a fad diet, but she has to be gluten free for her health, and like the smallest little microscopic piece of gluten would basically attack her body. So that's been really challenging for her, you know, if there's a party at school or a birthday party, you know, or the teacher has Play-Doh or something. I never knew that Play-Doh has gluten in it, you know?
So, me either.
So just like things like that, like that's been a struggle for her. And she's felt very much alone. She's felt like, you know, how will I cope with this and how will I live my life with this? And it's really interesting because we see, yeah, she's got that and I've got stuttering and another kid has ADD or a peanut allergy, or, I mean, everyone's got something. And, you know, I think accepting that and trying to come to peace with it is the healthiest thing we can try to do.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah. So speaking of coming to peace with things like this, you know, you told me beforehand, before we started hitting record, that your wife is a psychologist. And anytime I talk to people who come from this background, my first question from them, for them is always, does this make you as a parent immune to the bullshit that every other parent has to deal with just because you happen to have like this breadth of knowledge? Like as a psychologist, you know, is your wife adept at handling parenting situations or more adept than most of us are?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, I think to some degree, yes, you know, and I mean, so she, you know, she got her PhD in pediatric neuropsychology. And then, you know, she did a bunch of residencies and she worked at several different children's hospitals and she has a private practice now. And so she's definitely, you know, seen her fair share of stuff in working with kids and has definitely helped countless families. And I think that's definitely given her an advantage in terms of looking at things from a parenting standpoint. But at the same point, it's different when it's your own kid, you know, and it's hard to sometimes translate or transfer what you've seen in other kids or even how you've helped other kids and how to adapt that to your own children.
Well, I'd imagine sometimes the things that you teach your children come back to bite you in the ass too, because you've taught me this. So, you know, it's just like, you know, something I have so many of these situations with my parents, you know, I always tell them, it's like, you guys dragged me around the world for my entire childhood. And now you're surprised that I want to see more of it. I like, you only have yourselves to blame for this.
Yeah. You know, we have always been very honest and open with the kids, you know, in terms of just everything, in terms of feelings and emotions or politics or the world or things that are happening, you know, which is really, so they're 11 and 8. And, you know, we've definitely had some interesting dinner table conversations. And the way that they approach the world and politics and all these different things in the environment, like it blows my mind sometimes. And they're incredibly empathetic. But sometimes I think that makes it hard for them to maybe have conversations with other kids who aren't interested in talking about the presidential election or what this means for the future of the world or whatever the case.
Yeah. So one thing that I wonder about being married to a psychologist, do you have moments when you have to have, you know, tell your wife, okay, turn off the psychologist and be my wife? Because I've seen this with friends who are life coaches, right? You'll call them and, you know, like I remember having this conversation with a friend after a breakup and I remember, you know, she went into coaching mode and then I was like, listen, I don't want you to be my damn coach. I just want you to shut the hell up and listen to me complain.
Right. I just need to vent. No, she's pretty good about that. She started after getting her PhD. She was working at a children's hospital in Philadelphia. And I mean, just was really seeing some brutally difficult things every single day with the kids that she had to see. And I think she developed early on, like the ability, you know, or just like the survival technique, you know, that look, I mean, I'm seeing some crap every day and I have to turn it off when I get home. There's a pretty good divider there.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So walk me through how you get from being this kid with a stutter to the creative director at a theme park.
So it's so weird and doesn't really make a lot of sense because, like I said, I mean, I would just avoid speaking altogether. Like, and so all of my teachers in school, like they always knew that I stuttered, you know, because we would have a sit down meeting at the beginning of the school year every year with my parents or the principal. And we'd have to go through the whole thing again and explain, you know, this is Robbie and he stutters and he doesn't want to do this or that. That sucked. So I was always, I mean, at a young age, I had to find other ways to express myself because I pretty much could not talk. I could not say a sound. So, you know, as I said, you know, like if I had to do an oral report or something, I would make a video and I would have all this video equipment at home. I had, you know, an editor, and a title maker and a sound mixer and all the stuff. And I would put together like these crazy elaborate videos. And I just loved doing it. And even though like my speech was really keeping me from doing a lot of things, asking out girls, seeing different movies, ordering food, whatever, I don't know, for some reason I had it in my head that I did not want it to let me, I didn't want it to dictate what I did with my career. And even though I had a guidance counselor who told me one time that I needed to find a job where I didn't have to talk, and she requested I could be a park ranger or a mime. A mime was actually
brought up to me. I don't think I've ever heard a high school guidance counselor suggest that somebody should become a mime.
I didn't even know you could that was a viable career option. But yeah, so, you know, hearing things like that in the back of my head, I'm like I had so much energy, you know, and passion for humor writing and comedy and SNL and entertainment and movies and TV. And, you know, and I wanted to do all these crazy things. And so hearing a park ranger or a mime really wasn't what I wanted. But yeah, so my journey was basically majoring in advertising in college and just having to do different things than everyone else was doing because I couldn't communicate, you know? So if I was in an advertising class and we had to do a presentation, you know, again, I mean, I would have to do a video or record something or, you know, just try to find another way to express myself. So I did that for a long time, you know, just been really an interesting journey, you know, of just a lot of different advertising agencies and a lot of different states and big agencies and small agencies and big accounts and small accounts and a lot of different personalities. But along the way, like the only consistent thing was basically hiding my speech. Because in my head, like if anyone ever found out that I stuttered, I would be mortified. You know, if anyone knew, or if my creative director knew, or the head of the agency knew that I stuttered, you know, I just had it in my head. They would never put me on a big account or bring me into a client meeting. You know, and so along with like all of that screwed up stuff in my head, I mean, I'm still in different speech therapies and going to a psychologist and looking into anxiety meds and like all these other things to kind of help control my my past and present feelings about speech and stuttering, and then also just trying to evolve and grow as a copywriter and a creative person. So that whole thing was a really long and ever evolving, twisting journey.
Wow. All right. Well, I want to talk about the creativity that goes into a theme park. I mean, you're the creative director at a theme park. And, you know, I think when we were talking before we hit record, you know, to me, like the handful of times that I have been to a theme park, I have this sort of sense that, wow, they've created this, you know, world that is separate from the real world where, you know, hot dogs cost $20, which, by the way, I want to know why that is since I'm talking to you, because, you know, ball games and, you know, theme parks, I'm like, you're going to pay, you know, top dollar for food that sucks, that costs nothing elsewhere. So you have to answer that question for me. The other question I have is why the theme park industry and the carnival industry have a monopoly on funnel cakes. I've never been able to figure this out. So you can answer that one for me too. But, you know, those ridiculous questions aside, I do want an answer on the funnel cakes more than the hot dogs. But, you know, what goes into creating, you know, this, you know, world that captures the imagination that's so different from the world that we're in on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up in Orlando, I loved going to the parks. I mean, so of course, Disney was here. We got Universal, I think, in 89 or 1990, you know, but I just, even as a small child, I was just so amazed. And it wasn't even with the attractions or the roller coasters themselves. I mean, it was just this kind of immersive aspect, like you said, you know, and I really, I was always just always so amazed and impressed with like the individual details, you know. So at Disney World, you know, at the Magic Kingdom, you know, how like the trash cans, for example, in Adventureland are different than the trash cans in Tomorrowland. I mean, and just as an example, I mean, just those little individual details were so important in immersing a guest in the experience. So, you know, as I said, growing up in Orlando, like we went to the parks a lot, and it just became something that that became a huge passion of mine. And what goes into it? So as someone, you know, who is now on the other side, you know, who is behind the scenes to a certain extent in helping to tell those stories, there is more that goes into it than I could have ever imagined, you know, from like the conversations about, you know, just like thinking about everything in terms of ride capacity, you know, and how many people how many people can possibly go on an attraction every hour, to, you know, the location of the restrooms. I mean, just all of these different things that you have to think about and have to take into consideration. Universal, you know, is fascinating to me, you know, because we have all of these different pieces of intellectual property in our parks, like Jurassic World or Harry Potter or Despicable Me, you know, so, which adds another interesting level to, I mean, the collaboration that has to be involved, you know, with all of these individual properties to help take those stories and bring them to life. And I can't give you an answer on the funnel cake because I'm sworn to secrecy on that.
Damn it. I'm still convinced that, you know, the only places you can get them, and maybe because, you know, if you eat them too often, you'll die. Because I remember I had what I thought was the most brilliant business idea when I was in business school. I think Pinkberry, which is this like frozen yogurt place, had just become really hot at the time in LA. And, you know, frozen yogurt was becoming all the rage. And I remember telling a friend, I'm like, you know what? Nobody has done yet. They've never created a place where you can buy funnel cakes because the damn carnival industry and theme parks have a monopoly. Why is that? And my friend sat down and he was like, yeah, but he's like, we got to make it healthy. I'm like, dude, that's an oxymoron. You can't make a funnel cake that's healthy unless it's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know? There's no such and thing. I remember, you know, eating one, like, and every time I eat one, I see one, I'm like, oh, that looks amazing. And immediately afterwards, I'm like, damn it, I regret eating this.
So good at the time though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think that what I love about, you know, what you've said is that you're creating an immersive experience. And I think that really struck me because I don't think we're limited to physical spaces when it comes to immersive experiences, right? If you look at the best writers, what do? They immerse you in whatever they're saying. I think that to me, you know, we were saying before, you know, we hit record, like the thing that I will look for before anything else is what this person's story is like. And is there a possibility to get a listener so immersed in the story that they can just sit in their driveway and we can create, you know, what NPR calls driveway moments? But I guess the real question is then, how do people bring that into their own work if they're not creating work out in the physical world? Because, you know, you as a theme park director probably have a lot of insight on how we bring it into other areas of our creative work.
Yeah. So I think one thing that I had to overcome in my own head, you know, because when I was starting out, you know, I worked on a lot of just really less than sexy accounts. I mean, I've done stuff for, I've written ads or TV commercials or, you know, all kinds of things for things like bed bugs or pest control products or, all kinds of insurance. I mean, just really like really, really dry stuff. I've done natural gas. I mean, how do you sell natural gas? I mean, every company's got the same kind of natural gas. It just, you know, it's a different logo on a billing statement, you know? So I always had this mindset when I was starting out, you know, that you can't do flashy work and sexy work unless it's, you know, for like a big flashy brand. And after a few years of kind of thinking that, I realized that's a cop-out. I mean, that's an easy way to say, I'll do like the bare minimum or give like the first or second idea that I have and not have to push any harder because, you know, it's a non-sexy brand. I think everything has gotten smarter. TV, obviously, movies, and advertising, and the way we communicate with people has just gotten smarter. And I think now, like, you have to immerse people in something if you want them just to listen to your message. I mean, I don't care if you are writing copy for a Facebook ad or a banner ad. I mean, and I don't think I've ever intentionally clicked on a banner ad in my life, but I mean, I think if you're still doing it, you've got to think about what will get someone to stop scrolling with their thumb and to listen. And, you know, I think it's harder than ever, obviously, because attention spans and there's so much noise and so many channels. But I think I like to do something, you know, and I heard this from someone else, and, you know, and I don't even remember their name to give them credit to it. But like, the idea is like in everything you do, you need to find some kind of a human truth, right? I mean, like, if you are doing something about bed bugs, like, what does that mean? You know, how do they affect a person who's sleeping in their sheets and they wake up in the morning and they've got like hundreds of bites all over their arms and legs? Like, what does that mean? What does that feel like? Do you feel like you've been invaded? Like your space is no longer safe and secure? You know, just like, how do you unpackage something enough and unravel it until you can find something that's actually true? So it doesn't feel like an ad or, you know, just, you know, a bunch of marketing fluff, but it feels like you read it or you hear it and you shake your head and nod your head and be like, yeah, I've been there. I get that.
It's so funny to hear you say this because, you know, I think that, you know, when you mention the words human truth, I'm then thinking to myself, yeah, that's literally what it is that makes every guest that we have, you know, who they are, is that they express a human truth that people can resonate with. And, you know, I think that that's really what's at the core of the most resonant stories. You know, and even thinking about my friend Mars Dorian, who talks about this idea of, you know, standing out in a way that his work is so distinctive, like you see his stuff, it rolls through your feed. And, you know, I love that you brought up this idea of, you know, not being able to do these things if you don't have sort of a sexy brand. Because I remember I did a workshop for Citibank, and it was a half day workshop in which we're talking about creativity and productivity. And the night before the workshop, I went to a shopping center in LA called The Grove. And normally I would have never noticed the signs, but because I was doing the workshop for them, I saw their signs. And I thought to myself, this sign is really forgettable. There's nothing about this that would make me actually stop and look at it if it weren't for the fact that I'm talking to these guys tomorrow. And then I thought to myself, now if Mars Dorian designed the stuff for them, you wouldn't be able to not stop and look at it. Yet I think that the fact that, you know, they've got this like 100-year-old brand, this logo that everybody knows, would prevent them from taking that risk.
Yeah. I think a big challenge, you know, that people who are in advertising or in a marketing field often have to face, you know, is that there's always like everything always feels like it's rushed. You know, everything is, you know, is already late. It was due yesterday. We have to get something out there as soon as possible. And I think I don't exactly know what's driving that, but it just seems like that's always the case every place I've ever worked. And I think in the desire sometimes to get something out or to beat someone else to the marketplace with a message, I mean, you're sacrificing that, you know, that true insight, again, that pure insight that will lead to the human truth that will make someone feel something. It's a shame.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's funny because the follow-up to that was going to be, I mean, how do you uncover the human truth in something? I mean, you're talking about it through the lens of, you know, designing theme parks, but I mean, how do you find that thread? Because I don't feel, and I'm not expecting a step-by-step answer to this. Like, this is one of those questions I think you don't really have an answer, more probably just an insight.
You know, I might have an answer. So I love just to, I think in order to create something immersive for a reader, a theme park guest, anyone, you need to first immerse yourself in just everything you can about whatever it is you're trying to think about or solve from a creative standpoint. So, you know, if I'm working on a project, say for, coffee, just like I will dig into articles and research and YouTube videos and just as many different things and different perspectives as possible, you know, to understand the perspective of the person who's growing the coffee beans. You know, I want to know what the everyday life is of the person, the farmer out there is growing the coffee beans, and what is that like? And then the process of transferring the beans onto the next step, you know, and then getting into the store. I want to know about what the place that the cup of coffee, you know, has in the everyday life of the mom or the dad or, you know, the husband or the wife or whoever, you know, who is exhausted and taking that first sip of cup of coffee in the morning, you know, or the people who went on a first date and they bonded over a cup of coffee. I mean, just all of these different experiences. And I think when you just kind of immerse yourself in this, almost to the point of like, you know, ad nauseum immersion, where you're just trying to understand every little detail, it ceases to become a product or a brand or a theme park or whatever, because you start to really get the human experience of it and what those coffee beans mean and what the first sip of coffee in the morning tastes like, or what a cup of coffee after an incredible meal feels like. And I think all of that immersion into the experience will lead you to creating what's true about that. Like, what's true and what impact does that experience have on the people who are taking part in it?
Wow. I love that. I mean, you've literally just given me so much fodder to think about even for my own ad reads for the show.
Awesome.
This has been really, really fun. I have just learned so much talking to you and feel like you've just filled this with nuggets of wisdom. So I have one final question for you, which I know you've heard me ask. What do you think about
funnel cakes.
Well, damn it. Like, of all the people who could have given me this answer, I was expecting it from you. And you, in this regard, this interview has been a complete failure, because I still don't know why the theme park industry has a funnel cake monopoly and you happen to be the creative director at one.
Absolutely.
This is really unfair. Maybe it's because they want to save the health of the American public.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it.
So, what do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think it's the thing that when you're not with them and you're not talking to them, but when you think about them, it's like the first thing that comes to mind. I think of my grandmother and who has passed away, but I think about her and she just, optimistic is not the right word, but just more like pure joy, would wake up every day and just be happy that the birds were chirping, or happy that the sky was blue, or happy that it was cloudy. I mean, just would find something to be happy about. And so when I think of her and when I remember her and when I talk about her to my kids, like, I talk about her joy. So I think what makes someone unmistakable is, you know, I guess, what is like the thing about them that you think about when you think of them?
I love that. That has to be one of my favorite answers I've ever heard.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your stories and your insight and your wisdom with our listeners. So where can people find out more about you without necessarily having to buy a ticket to Universal Theme Park?
Well, if you do want to buy a ticket to the parks, you can find us online and there's annual passes available. I am on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, all that stuff. At Rob Bloom CW, RobBlooMCW.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member, who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.